Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, January 16th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Delivery expanding to Gilderland, 518-432-0358. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Richard Holub of the Neurological Associates of Albany. He's here to answer your questions about Alzheimer's disease treatment and research. We always get a lot of calls on this program, and this is going to be one we get a lot of people calling. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Holub, your calls and much more all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The nation is honoring the civil rights legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. at a time when the country is deeply divided following Donald Trump's election. The president-elect has just concluded his meeting with the iconic leader's son, Martin Luther King III. King talked to reporters about keeping Trump to his word to be a president for all people.
He is going to represent Americans. He said that over and over again. And I think that we will continue to evaluate that. I think that the nation supports. I believe that that's his intent. But I think also we have to consistently engage with pressure, public pressure. It doesn't happen automatically. My father and his team understood that, did that. And I think that Americans are prepared to do that.
But controversy over Trump persists. Earlier, Congressman John Lewis, also a prominent civil rights figure, said he would not attend Trump's inauguration, saying he is not a legitimate president. In response, Trump tweeted that Lewis was all talk. The president-elect says he is finishing a plan to replace the Affordable Care Act with a proposal that would provide insurance for everybody, quote unquote. NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports Trump's comments to the Washington Post come as Republicans in Congress continue their debate on how to repeal and replace Obamacare.
President-elect Donald Trump did not provide any specific details about his health care plan to the Washington Post, but he did say that it would be, quote, much less expensive and would involve, quote, much lower deductibles. He added that he does not plan to cut benefits for Medicare and that he does not want a single-payer health care system. But Trump said he does expect Republicans in Congress to replace the Affordable Care Act quickly. They did approve a budget resolution last week that sets up a framework for repealing Obamacare, but House Speaker Paul Ryan has said that lawmakers are not holding hard deadlines for replacing the federal health policy. Hansi Lo Wang, NPR News.
A three-day ice storm is moving out of Kansas today, leaving a big winter mess and extensive tree damage in western and north-central areas of the state. Deborah Shar of member station KMUW has details.
Freezing rain changed over to snow in Dodge City, and now the snow is covering the thick layer of ice that accumulated since Friday. The National Weather Service says there are power outages and major tree damage. People say it sounded like thunder when big branches came crashing down yesterday. There's concern that as the ice on tree limbs begins to melt and the limbs snap back into place, more power lines will get knocked down. It's a different situation in the eastern half of Kansas. Temperatures are above freezing, so there's no ice, just a lot of rain. Wichita broke a daily rainfall record that stood since 1889. For NPR News, I'm Deborah Shar in Wichita.
U.S. markets are closed on this holiday. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Constant Contact, committed to helping small businesses and nonprofits succeed with email marketing. Working to help organizations meet their goals through personalized marketing help via phone, seminars, and webinars. More at ConstantContact.com.
Support comes from Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement. A proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com. Shannon Rose designed Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com. And from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com.
This is WAMC Regional News. I'm Ian Pickus. In the headlines, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren says Representative John Lewis has earned the right to raise questions about the legitimacy of Donald Trump's election. The Massachusetts Democrat said Lewis put his life on the line during the civil rights movement, while Trump hasn't put his life on the line for anyone except Donald Trump. Warren said U.S. intelligence agencies have raised questions about Russian interference in the election. She said those questions must be answered to find out exactly what Russia did. The Georgia Democrat said he doesn't consider Trump a legitimate president, blaming Russia for helping him win the White House. The Republican president-elect criticized Lewis, tweeting, "All talk, 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 no action or results." Warren made her comments today in Boston. According to a new economic impact study conducted by Fairweather Consulting, historic Huguenot Street in New Paltz contributes more than $1 million to Ulster County's economy each year. Hudson Valley correspondent Hank Gross reports.
According to the report, as of November 2016, the street currently supports at least 13 jobs in the county. The report indicates that historic Huguenot Street has the potential to contribute 30 jobs and $1.8 million to the county as non-local visitation increases. We pursued the study to improve our understanding of the contributions historic Huguenot Street makes to the local economy, said board chairwoman Mary Etta Snyder. Historic Huguenot Street was founded in 1894 as the Huguenot Patriotic Historical and Monumental Society to preserve the nationally acclaimed collection of stone houses. For WAMC in the Hudson Valley, I'm Hank Gross.
Members of the Black Lives Matter movement are organizing a protest of what they call systemic racism in Burlington's public schools and brutality by the city's police force. A speakout was scheduled for this hour in front of Burlington High School and scheduled to end at the Burlington Police Department. Black Lives Matter Vermont is calling for more people of color to serve as public school administrators and teachers and policies that work to decrease racial bullying and harassment of black kids. The group's organizers also say the Burlington Police Department has failed to adequately address racial discrimination and police brutality. Wall Street closed for the Martin Luther King Day holiday. Weather forecast: sunny, chilly, low to mid-30s this afternoon. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, lows in the upper teens to mid-20s. And for tomorrow, a chance of rain, snow, and sleet in the morning, then just rain by afternoon, highs in the low to mid-30s. Sunny and 36 in Bennington, Vermont. Sunny 39 Peekskill, New York. Sunny 37 Great Barrington, Mass. Sunny 39 degrees Kent, Connecticut. Stay tuned for more WAMC News after Vox Pop at 3.
Support comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the capital region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Nathan Littower Hospital, Gloversville, New York, announcing new primary care center on Main Street in Fonda, opening in 2017, NLH.org. Hudson Wine Merchants, a wine and spirits boutique in the heart of Hudson, New York. Curbside service and delivery available. Hudson Wine Merchants, raise your glass. HudsonWines.com. And from Dance Flurry, presenting Albany Shindig this Friday, 7 p.m. at First Congregational Church in Albany. A concert in hoedown dance with live fiddle music by John Kirk and Trish Miller. DanceFlurry.org.
Hello once again, welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us on this Medical Monday is a real expert, and he's here to discuss Alzheimer's disease treatment and research, Dr. Richard Holub of the Neurological Associates of Albany. Dr. Holub graduated from Rutgers University, received his medical degree from Georgetown. He's a member of the American Academy of Neurology and has been engaged in Alzheimer's research for more than 30 years and has contributed to the development of all five drugs approved by the FDA to treat the disease. Dr. Holub, welcome to Medical Monday.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And you know your reputation precedes you. If you want to call, ladies and gentlemen, and a lot of you will because a lot of you have specific questions about this, it's 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Doc, so where are we?
Where are we? Well, the condition of Alzheimer's disease is at a point where there's an incredible amount of research that is being poured into work on the potential better understanding and treatments of the disease. It really hasn't been that long, I would say since the 1970s, that we actually realized that what old age memory impairment is actually Alzheimer's disease. Before that, we thought that it was simply aging, a normal aging process, and that it wasn't a disease. And what was called Alzheimer's disease previously was just the patients who might get memory impairment in their 30s, 40s, 50s, very young, and they would call that rare condition Alzheimer's disease. In fact, even Dr. Alzheimer's work in 1906 identifying the disease, it was felt that it was a rare, obscure condition, that it would be a footnote in any textbook. He had no idea by the time he died that that this was going to be a very important disease in the 21st century.
So what is it?
Well, human beings, we make this marvelous protein called beta amyloid, and it's a primitive autoantibiotic fragment, belongs to a class of autoantibiotic fragments. And when we're younger, if we get hit in the head, it showers the brain, protects the brain, and then gets reabsorbed, no problems. But after the age of 45, it'll start to accumulate, and some of us more than others. And by the time we're 65, maybe one out of 12 of us will have some cognitive complaints. And by the time we're 85, by some studies, 50% of us will have Alzheimer's disease. And that incidence keeps rising as we get older because we have lots of people who are aging beyond that.
So, first of all, let me give that phone number again before I forget. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So, Doc, so tell me, what is an amyloid?
Well, this is a protein fragment. In the body, many of our cells will produce large proteins that can be then chopped into multiple smaller protein fragments that have recognized functions. And the term amyloid itself refers to small protein fragments that then link up with other fragments and polymerize and cause chains, which may form fibrils and tubules and et cetera. And in Alzheimer's disease, the amyloid is called beta amyloid.
So how do we know if we have it?
Well, since
they used to say, I'm sorry for interrupting, but they used to always say, well, you don't know until the guy's dead. That's not true anymore, right?
That's not true anymore. Now, certainly we keep refining our clinical diagnostic acumen by talking to the patient, doing clinical tests, and we get between 85% and 95% accuracy in the diagnosis. But about 5 years ago at our site, among with other sites, we spent a great deal of time developing a amyloid PET scan, which can identify the amyloid burden in life and tell people if the cognitive questions they have, the decrement in thinking they see, if it's due to Alzheimer's disease or not. It's available in research only right now.
So is there a difference? Because we keep hearing, well, my grandmother had dementia. She didn't have Alzheimer's. Is that a false dichotomy?
Well, likely the answer to that question would be yes. To be more precise, dementia is a decrement in memory and cognition from a previous higher level to the point that you might need some assistance in one area of functioning or another. The most common cause of dementia is Alzheimer's disease. To be sure, people can get multiple strokes that'll cause dementia. Mm-hmm. They could get a head injury that would cause dementia. They could get an infection, meningitis, etc. But the vast majority, the largest number, are caused by Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm. So what do we do? I mean, when we think we may have it, you said up to 50%, or that somebody else may have it in our family, what's the right move? What do you do?
I think it's important to respect the prescriptions for good health that we all know. Engaging in, and I'm going to jump ahead to what the individual can do before they seek medical attention, or after they seek medical attention, for that matter. Regular exercise. Probably by far the most positive thing someone can do is regular exercise. Almost every study that is done looking at exercise and cognition, exercise makes a difference. And it doesn't have to be aerobic exercise. You don't have to go three times a week getting your heart rate to such and such a number for so many minutes, although that's good, might even be better. But you can engage in housework, in yard work. Physically moving is important. The reason why physical movement's important, exercise, socialization, keeping your left language brain busy and your right arts, crafts, music brain busy, all of those things result in an increased production in the brain of protective neurotrophic factors that in animal studies can be measured in the spinal fluid. Say 20 minutes after exercise, they can measure an increase in these brain protective factors. Why they're secreted, God knows, but they are, and it's important.
So if I were to do an hour on my Schwinn Aerodyne bicycle every morning for 25 years at a high rate of speed, would that be a good indicator to why I have relatives who have Alzheimer's and I don't?
It might well be. Some studies say you're doing 15 minutes more than you need to.
But they always keep raising it, you know.
That's true. That's true. We always want more. It is a very important factor to maintaining good cognitive health.
Okay, y'all. Now, what about smoking and Alzheimer's? Is there any correlation there?
There is a literature that suggests that smoking results in an increased risk for Alzheimer's disease. It's not a major risk, but it is a risk, and it does contribute.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. Then we're going to come back and talk to Jim and Lisa and Rick and Assad, okay?
Support comes from Saratoga Hospital Bariatric Surgery and Weight Loss Program, with Medical Director Dmitry Baranov and his team of healthcare professionals providing personalized weight loss options. SaratogaHospital.org for details. New York Oncology Hematology, with offices in Albany, Amsterdam, Clifton Park, Hudson Rexford, and Troy. World-class care close to home. NewYorkOncology.com. Curran Compliance Services, Inc., Greenwich, New York, and Mendota Heights, Minnesota. In New York and across the country, life insurance carriers and their distribution partners come to us for DOL fiduciary rule compliance training and guidance. CurranCompliance.com. Capital Roots, working to help people in the Capital Region access healthy, affordable, and local food. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org for information on how to support. And from the 1850 House and Tavern, offering their romance package featuring champagne and chocolate, the 1850house.com or 845-658-7800 for details.
We are back, thanks to Zachary. All right, Jim from Matamoros. Okay, Jim, let's have at it. Go ahead.
I guess you've already answered the question, which was what other forms of dementia must be differentially diagnosed from Alzheimer's.
And we did answer that. The doctor did answer it, Dr. Holub. And it as I remember, let's see how good my memory is, doctor. The answer is most of it is Alzheimer's. And some of it from stroke and others may be something else.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Thank you very much. All right. Now we'll go to Lisa in Oneonta, one of my favorite places on earth. All right, Lisa, you're on. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm curious about the distinction between traumatic brain injuries, later stages, and Alzheimer's. Thank you.
Stay there. Go ahead.
Well, traumatic brain injury, such as the kind that you see in athletes, is a very similar disease, but it's not identical. In traumatic brain injury, dementia, the individual develops a progressive process in which another protein, also active in Alzheimer's disease, called tau, begins to multiply and expand, much like a virus. It spreads from cell to cell. It accumulates in certain areas of the brain and causes a progressive dementia. In Alzheimer's disease, we have a protein called beta amyloid that activates tau protein and makes it toxic, and then it spreads from one region of the brain to the other. Now, what athletes get is probably different from people who've had other kinds of head injury, where they may have brain damage from their head injury. But in general, traumatic brain injury differs from Alzheimer's disease, although years later, people with head injuries may be more likely to get Alzheimer's disease, and it's epidemiologically shown that there's a relationship, but the exact mechanism is not understood.
Okay, Lisa?
Yes, thank you.
Great, thank you. All right, 1-800-348-2551. And now to, let's see here. Yeah, Rick in Saratoga. Rick, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Or good afternoon, I should say. Alan, first of one of those famous first-time callers.
Great.
Doctor, thank you for giving us some time. I've got a kind of convoluted situation and just looking for some advice on how I might be able to proceed. I have an elder mother. She's 87. And over the years, she's been demonstrating increased forgetfulness. Kind of recently, she's been getting fairly aggressive as far as her dealing with other individuals. And we're starting to see a trend towards a little bit of paranoia, which, of course, has me very concerned. Recently, she was hospitalized in a rehab facility for a broken pubic bone, and she finally looked at me and she realized that she said that I may be forgetting, I may be losing some of my memory. And I jumped on, tried to get the to give her a cognitive test. She refused that the next day, and she anything else as far as testing go. Any ideas on where I might be able to go from here to try and take care of Mom?
I think the best thing that one can do, if it's possible, and it's not always possible, is to make an appointment directly to see a specialist. That in part depends on what your relationship is with your primary care physician, who may be comfortable dealing with this. But since she's not giving you much room, that is to say, if you get her there once, that may be your only shot if she's shy. But to get her to a neurologist to evaluate it, clearly the signs of early cognitive impairment are there. Behavioral changes, irritability, grouchiness. One of my patients, I said, "How you doing?" And he said, "I'm fine, except I've become short, fused, grouchy, irritable, and hard to live with." And to which his wife, sitting in the room, said, "Amen." And so that irritability and that suspiciousness, early paranoia you're seeing, are so common in this condition that I think it would be and possibly remediable. With medication, it seems that it's important to proceed with a medical evaluation, either with your primary doctor, if you've got the strong relationship there, or with a neurology specialist.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, and maybe I'm a wise guy now, Doc, but...
You're a wise guy?
Yeah, maybe I am a little bit. And my question is, following up on that, you said that past a certain age, we think that 50-50, right? You're going to get it or you don't get it, right?
By age 85, 50% of people have Alzheimer's.
So here is somebody who's 87, let's say.
Yes.
Your chances, no matter what your diagnosis is, about 50% of getting it right.
That's true. You can flip a coin, correct. That's true.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rick.
No, I think the good doctor, you know, kind of said, well, I had a suspicion that the first time around. You know, we have a new PCP, but maybe next time mom goes in for a checkup, I should spend some time with the doctor and explain what's going on, too.
Absolutely. And that's definitely the place to start.
Hey, Rick, thanks for the call. So, folks, the number here again is 1-800-348-2551. And now we're going to go to Assad. All right, Assad, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Doc. How you doing, Alan? Question basically on, I read a paper that talked about short-term fasting induces profound neuronal autophagy. So, and the fact that they also consider Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes, a kind of a sugar insulin resistance problem in the brain. Is fasting a viable option to help the cells clean themselves out, essentially, because it does lead to an increase in autophagy? And would they necessarily pick up those background proteins that are accumulating? Do you think it has a clinical, you know, value, possibly?
Now, that may be the best question ever asked on this program. Go ahead.
Okay. It is true that as we get older, our cells become more and more filled with debris. In the brain, we often use the term lipofuscin for the debris that collects in cells. And it is true that the tau protein, which propagates this disease when activated by beta amyloid, lays on and is attached to that lipofuscin and opens up in a way that permits other tau proteins to lie exactly in the right place on top of it and form a polymerization chain that this debris that collects is important in Alzheimer's disease and in probably all neurodegenerative diseases. I think autophagy, which is in part the removal of includes consideration for the removal of this wear and tear debris, is an important mechanism, and I do believe that your suggestion that this is important might become a very significant treatment for this disease. And it's something I've been working on in nights and weekends, be honest. But I'm not familiar with your relating an increase in autophagy, reduction of the accumulation of this wear and tear material in the cells as it relates to fasting. And I haven't seen that as prominently displayed in any of my national or international meetings. So it is, I think it's an important area, and you've actually stimulated me to go look a little more.
But I love what he said about wait.
I know it's with rats mainly, but I haven't done it in humans a little bit, so I understand there's a delay at lag time.
Okay, Assad, wait a second now. Assad said that this is the third level of Alzheimer's, of diabetes. Is there a relationship between diabetes and Alzheimer's?
There is a relationship between diabetes and Alzheimer's disease, and it's complex. Probably the first area that was described is that the beta amyloid protein, which promulgates and fans the flames of Alzheimer's disease, is in part metabolized by an enzyme in the brain called IDE, insulin degrading enzyme. If the amyloid protein is degraded by this, it keeps its level a little lower. If one has elevated blood sugars, brain insulin levels rise, and the enzyme IDE becomes preoccupied with metabolizing insulin, with breaking down insulin, and is not breaking down beta amyloid, and the beta amyloid begins to collect more and more, and it can, again, fan the flames of Alzheimer's disease.
Wow.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Well, and some of the things we hear, so for example, when Doc tells us that exercise helps and that, you know, that the studies show that, that's true also about diabetes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so there may be some coming out. Hey, Asad, that was a great great question. Thanks so much for doing it.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. We are now going to go, I don't owe you a break, do I? No. We're now going to go to, let's see here, Mark in Lenox, Massachusetts. Okay, Mark in Lenox, you're on.
Yes, hello. Wonderful show. I had to call in. I was, if you remember, Avi Dresner, I was on his show talking about very similar items. But
what we spoke about,
I've been writing since about the year 1999 about beverages and particularly beer, how it relates to health. And but interestingly enough, over the years, I've gotten invited to a lot of medical shows, even overseas, to talk about, you know, health and things, but that not always realizing that it's beer. But my question would be, alcoholic beverages, it doesn't really have to be alcohol, but, you know, alcohol from beer, wine. And the other aspect of it is I've seen a lot of advantages with coffee and certain aspects of coffee. So is there something that we can handle for our stomachs that could even affect us as far as Alzheimer's goes? And that's just the basis of my question.
Okay, great question. Okay, Doc, so then I'm going to give it to you in two parts, alcohol and coffee.
Okay. It's true that many people, when they're younger, can handle alcohol, sometimes fair amounts of alcohol, without any obvious decrement. I'm always impressed at autopsy and neuropathology how small and tiny the brains are of people who drink heavily.
Interesting.
Even if they're not formally alcoholics, but they just drink regularly, brains are smaller. There's a loss of neurons. And then you may not see any noticeable decrement in their cognition, maybe some. If when you're healthy and all your protective systems are working well when you're younger and you're exposed to alcohol, that's one thing. But when you start to have issues with your brain cells in Alzheimer's disease and they're not working well and they're a bit sick, but they're working nonetheless, and then you add alcohol, you get a greater loss of cognitive functioning. To put it in clinical terms, my patients who I am unable to stop them from drinking regularly alcoholic beverages progress the fastest. And it's very troubling to me. I will get adult children. I will have them go to the home and clear every single bottle or can out of the house that they can find. It's very significant. In contradistinction to the fact that there are antioxidants, particularly in red wine, and probably a glass of red wine a day is a good thing. But not excessive alcohol. It's not good for the brain.
And coffee?
Coffee has a great deal of antioxidants in it as well. And this includes decaffeinated coffee. The caffeine is not a requirement to obtain the antioxidant benefit. There are significant antioxidants in tea as well, but somewhat more in coffee. Always watching out for potential difficulties handling the coffee, but coffee is considered strongly antioxidant and might be helpful.
Interesting. Okay, Mark?
Very good, and a wonderful show. What about singing would be the last part of it? I've made a commitment in 2017. I'm going to learn how to sing the blues, and I don't know if that's going to make me live any longer, but it'd be nice to know if it
could be.
Yeah, I think so. We know that right brain activity, which includes arts, crafts, music, singing, hobbies, is important for the brain. And you know, music therapy is important. Back to my main man there, Pythagoras, Pythagorean theorem, mayor of Crotone. He promulgated music therapy hundreds of years before Christ. So I think music is important, and some of my patients who play instruments and who sing actually do remarkably well.
Wow, that's terrific. I haven't met Pythagoras since geometry class. Thanks very much, Mark. Okay, and now we're going to go to Helen in Highland Falls, all right? Helen in Highland Falls, you're on.
Hi, how are you? My mother had vascular dementia. They felt it wasn't Alzheimer's. We have dementia that runs in our family. I'm sure the rest of it was Alzheimer's. But when they did the autopsy, it kind of confirmed that it wasn't Alzheimer's. I'd like to know what vascular dementia is.
Vascular dementia... It is a dementia, a condition with a reduction in cognitive functioning, which in its particular case is due to small or recurrent small or large vessel stroke injuries, where there's an actual blood vessel that stops working and brain tissue beyond that is lost. There are small strokes that are called lacunar strokes that are often associated with hypertension and diabetes, which can pepper the brain with these almost microscopic little lesions here and there, which become cumulative.
That's what they found upon autopsy.
Yeah.
And so that is what vascular dementia is.
And to doctor's credit, he did sort of mention that in the very beginning. Not that everybody listens to everything he says.
I didn't catch it.
No, nobody talked about it. But he did talk about stroke being one of those things that could cause, you know, this kind of memory loss. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it very much. All right. I'll give the number 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now my neighbor Michelle in Great Barrington. Michelle, you're on.
Hi, neighbor and doctor. Hello. My question is, could you explain what Lewy body dementia is, and does it have any relationship to Alzheimer's?
Surely. In pure Lewy body dementia, first of all, in most of the neurodegenerative diseases, there is an accumulation of a protein fragment that polymerizes. In the case of Alzheimer's disease, it's the beta amyloid and one form of tau. There's another group of diseases, forgive me the name, called synucleinopathies. And they include Parkinson's disease and Lewy body disease. In Lewy body disease, alpha-synuclein a protein fragment collects and polymerizes in slightly different regions of the brain. And these folks begin almost always, not always, but almost always with early hallucinations, usually visual. Mostly visual, sometimes children, sometimes adults, sometimes they're seeing formed hallucinations out the window. I saw a gentleman last week, he'd go to the window and he would be seeing a car out the window, and underneath the car was somebody working on the car, but when the relatives looked, there was no car and no gentleman. They often begin in the evening as the patient's falling asleep, but they progress, and 50% of the time they don't bother to tell their relatives about it because it seems almost dreamlike, yet it's quite real. Sometimes later on they'll begin to react to them. They'll also begin to develop some Parkinsonian-like stiffness and a dementia. Now, there is a group of patients who will have both Lewy body disease and Alzheimer's disease at the same time. I can go on and on about it.
Yeah, we have to take a break, but one last question is very important to me. Who's Louie?
It just refers to the pathological concretions that these take on a neuropathological examination.
Michelle, thank you very much. Okay, so now we're going to take a short break, the compulsory 240 break, and we will be right back.
Support comes from the Hyde Collection and Art Museum and Historic House in Glens Falls, New York. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, hydecollection.org. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, offering prefabricated house kits using local materials and featuring passive solar and net zero energy designs. More information at noble-home.net. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Penny Farthing Investment Management, Amherst, a socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal, retirement, and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies. BrightPenny.org. And from Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. The-gazebo.com.
Hello. Hello. Are you all there? We're here. Doctor here. This one just came in by... We have to get back to the phones. There are a lot of people on the phones. But from our very good friend Richard, who says, I received a kit to send in a swab to determine if there is a genetic correlation between DNA signatures and Alzheimer's. Can you add any insights and hope for those who show a propensity through our DNA code? Well, first of all, that's a very good point that Rich makes, that we can tell that some people are more prone to it just from the code, right?
That's true. All you have to do is be lucky enough to live old enough and be a normal human being, and you can get Alzheimer's disease. However, if you have a genetic variant that results in an overproduction of the beta amyloid, you might get Alzheimer's disease in your 20s, 30s, 40s.
Do you see much of it?
No, it's very rare. It's very rare. I've seen a number of patients in their 40s. A lot more in their 50s, but it's really not till we're older that I see the greatest number of patients, except perhaps in the patients with Down syndrome, where they genetically get, instead of two doses of the beta amyloid, they get three doses of the beta amyloid, and they develop the disease much earlier. And so that's the genetic group. And then there's a middle group where people will have a genetic risk factor, which means they may or may not get the disease. And those people might get their disease a bit earlier than the general population. But if they do all the things we spoke about, like exercise and keep their left language brain busy and their right brain, arts, crafts, and music brain and socialization up, they might not get it. And then the last group is folks without any risk factors, without any genetic factors, who, as they get older, develop the disease.
Have there been any studies of twins, identical twins, who one gets it, one doesn't?
Yes, and the first thing I can tell you is that there's a lot of disparity. Where one twin will have the disease and the other won't, particularly when it comes to older twins, particularly when it comes to even with twins with a risk factor, because how you live your life results in different ways that the risk factors may be expressed or may not be expressed.
Fascinating. Okay. So now, 1-800-348-2551. We're going to go to, let's see here. Yes, Katie in Albany. Katie, you've been hanging on for a long time, and we thank you for your patience. Go ahead.
No problem. My question for you is it's really interesting to hear all these correlations to exercise, genetic related to dementia and its onset. I'm curious, how does your diet play into it? With today's day and age, everyone's gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan, vegetarian, whatever you want. Well, how does that play, if it has a role or if it doesn't?
I think that there isn't much evidence for gluten-free, vegan relationship to Alzheimer's disease, or perhaps it's not been studied well enough yet. However, we do know that a generally low-fat, low-cholesterol, cardiac-friendly, preferably Mediterranean diet makes a difference. To take it a step further, we use the little jingle, what's good for the heart is good for the brain as far as diet goes. And we know that there is a linkage between vascular disease and Alzheimer's disease, but the linkage is not direct. And it's been certainly demonstrated epidemiologically. My thoughts are, so this is unpublished data here, my thoughts are that most of the things that we see which are vascular disease, peripheral vascular disease, cardiac disease, stroke disease, affect large arteries, even small arteries. In Alzheimer's disease, I believe it is the microcirculation that's affected, the capillary beds. Nonetheless, it's part of the circulation. And there's growing evidence and some very intriguing data that even you and I, who aren't in the lab working with microscopes, could actually see and be impressed with.
But you do spend a lot of time in your lab, don't you, Doc?
Some.
Katie?
Yep, that helps a lot. Thank you. I was just curious what his opinion was, if there was research or evidence. But hopefully in the future, they'll kind of see if there is more of a correlation or if there isn't.
Well, it looks like there may be. So your question is prescient.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
No, I would agree. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Okay, we'll go to, we've got a Scott in Halifax, Vermont. Scott in Halifax. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question about sleep deprivation. Does that affect your chances of getting Alzheimer's, and can sleep deprivation, especially chronic sleep deprivation, imitate Alzheimer's?
I'm very interested in this answer, Scott.
Which means I'm going to have to tread very carefully. The answer is there's a lot of research in sleep and Alzheimer's disease. In fact, I have a major program right now that involves this area. In my particular program, we are trying to improve the sleep structure, the sleep architecture, with a medication over a seven-month period in patients with Alzheimer's disease, could be very mild, but they're who are on a medication. And the purpose of improving the sleep architecture and structure is as follows. It has been known for a very short time, maybe just 2 years, that in a certain part of sleep called phase 3-4 sleep, which is slow wave sleep, the recent memories from the day that are stored on the sides of our head in the hippocampal regions migrate to the frontal lobes from temporary storage to the frontal lobes of more permanent storage. So the better the sleep quality, likely the better the transferring of this information to hard long-term storage. Additionally, during phase 3-4 sleep, the same time, the brain cells kind of contract a little bit and open up the spaces between the cells, and the spinal fluid washes through the brain and flushes out a lot of the gunk that's collecting there during the day. So in improving sleep quality is important. And we all know, you know, every year of life we are older, we don't sleep as well as the year of life before. And so sleep becomes an issue as we get older. And working on any method that we can to improve the quality of sleep would be very helpful.
Okay, Scott?
Sure, sounds like it. Go ahead.
Okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Scott. And now we'll go to Nancy in Wilton. All right, Nancy in Wilton, you're on.
Hi, I'm calling. I didn't catch the beginning of your show, so I don't know if you're talking only about Alzheimer's. But I'm calling about the approach or treatment or any kind of help for a loved one who has progressive MS and is having cognitive difficulties. So it's memory, it's being able to multitask, it's controlling emotions and that sort of thing.
Well, we are talking about Alzheimer's disease, but I'll digress. In multiple sclerosis, there is a thinning of the insulation layers of the nerve so that the nerves that are working slower. And the connections between the brain networks are working slower, and sometimes they may not work depending upon how functional the bundles of connecting fibers are between one brain network and the other. So cognitive processing is clearly slowed. Very few patients with multiple sclerosis develop a significant dementia. In fact, I have to tell you, I don't have any patients in my practice at all who have Alzheimer's disease who have multiple sclerosis. But the mechanisms are different. But just to say that there's something about that needs to be studied. Nonetheless, people do develop cognitive impairment with multiple sclerosis. It is more often seen in people who are not on disease-modifying medications or not on the right disease-modifying medications for multiple sclerosis. And it's also true over time. Usually doesn't go on to full dementia, and we don't have a treatment, and obviously we're working on it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And we'll go to, let's see here, Rick in Rosendale. All right, Rick, welcome back. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Hello, doctors. How are you today?
Very good. Go ahead.
I have a question or comment about what you see as far as the research from Dr. Alan McDonald's work on infection being at least one source of Alzheimer's and whether that is recognized. It seems to not be recognized by the Alzheimer's Association for some reason. He started work back in the 1980s. And has more recently has some other work on how nematodes have been found in Alzheimer's plaques. Are you aware of any of his research?
Not sufficiently to give you a gratifying answer, but I can tell you that as I said, beta amyloid, which accumulates in the brain and is a necessary accumulation to trigger this disease is at its basis a primitive antibiotic fragment. It is possible that there is an overproduction of this secondary to an endemic brain infection that continues to stimulate the production of this beta amyloid. But that hasn't been shown, and it hasn't been demonstrated, so it remains an outlier possibility. When the evidence is there, it's not a ridiculous thought at all. It's just that in order to develop what I would call class one data, sufficient information such as to prove the law of gravity, you really solid stuff. It's very far. It's really in the hypothetical range. The brain is filled with over a lifetime with viruses that don't belong there, and other kinds of elements that don't belong there. We can check this in the spinal fluid by evaluating the spinal fluid DNA and seeing that we've got lots of things in the brain that accumulate over a lifetime. So whether or how these relate, there's really no strong evidence yet.
Rick, thank you. All right, now we're going to go to, now this is interesting, on line number 5, we have a telephone number. I don't know what it means. Let's try that. Line number 5, you're on. Who are you?
I'm not sure. Am I speaking?
Yeah, you're speaking. Who are you?
Okay, my name is Lee.
Okay, Lee.
And I'm from Belchertown, Massachusetts.
Right.
And what I'd like to know is the doctor's experience with the effects of THC in the brain cell walls and how that might relate to Alzheimer's or dementia.
You'll have to help me a little bit. I'm not familiar with what you're saying. THC?
No, THC from marijuana.
From marijuana. I haven't done any work with marijuana or cannabinoids directly. Certainly, there's a rich industry looking to separate those fragments which are mind-altering from a different group of cannabinoids that may not have mind-altering effect but be medicinally efficacious. And I'm not involved in that work, although I do have someone who works for me who has been. In general, I have found negative effects on cognition, not positive effects. And those people who are inveterate cannabis users, I'm not seeing preservation. I'm seeing degradation.
Okay, that answers that. The only reason I'm cutting people off now is because we're really almost out of time. Let's go to Tracy in Waterville. Tracy, got to make it short. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I was just trying to, I'm asking what causes sundowners in dementia patients?
The sleep-wake cycle is perturbed in Alzheimer's disease, and the fewer cues that you get as it gets dark, you don't see as well. You're not as well grounded in your that which is around you. Lead to fewer and fewer things that can ground a patient. That they're in their room, they're in their house, and it enhances confusion.
And what is it, Doc?
Sundowner syndrome is a syndrome in dementia, usually Alzheimer's disease, where late in the day people begin to get agitated, irritable, hallucinate, become delusional, and it may last on and off through the night, and it's a very difficult and troublesome problem.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, now let's see if we can sneak one in here, and it's got to be snuck in because that's it. We'll go to Peter. All right, Peter, you're on, but only for a second. Go ahead. What do you got?
Yeah, Hattie, I have a lot of iron in my well water, and I heard that soluble iron, too much of it in your diet could trigger Alzheimer's. Is there any connection between that?
Generally not. Iron does accumulate. It can accumulate in the liver and in the brain, men more than women. And it can aggravate neurodegenerative diseases, but it's clearly not an important contributor to Alzheimer's disease in that particular way. So there is some epidemiologic work. It's a very weak association.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're out of time. My apologies to Debbie and Paul and Norman and Essie who waited too long and we're still hanging on the phone. Sorry about that. I want to thank Dr. Richard Holub of the Neurological Associates of Albany for being with us today. Support for Medical Monday comes from Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture design for resilience and renewability designed for the next 100 years. CNHArchitects.com. Thanks to our great engineer, Zach Malloy, Joe Makowick for answering the phones. Our producer's Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. Thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues. Tomorrow, Congressman John Faso of New York's 19th District joins us on the Vox Pop. Stay tuned now for a news update.